a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 253. Oh, my gosh. Man, I don't know what is going on tonight. I've got, like, serious, like, heartburn going on. And I never get heartburn. Sometimes I get heartburn, like, late at night, like, when I'm sleeping, because it has something to do with my CPAP machine. I have sleep apnea. And sometimes it just seems like it's I think it's just because, like, it's usually like whenever I'm need a lot and you can see that the machine has set itself really high. I think it like just pushes some air down there or something like that. But all day long, I don't know what, I haven't eaten anything out of the norm. I haven't done anything out of the norm. And I'm just like, man, I am hurting here. So if you hear awkward pauses and me, you know, gasping or making noises or something. I'm just getting old. I am old. So speaking of old, no, I have not started my 22 push-up challenge yet. I'm so tired. I've just barely slept the last couple of nights. Maybe that's why I have heartburn, but I've been like insomnia boy before and I feel pretty good. I'm pretty alert. I feel pretty solid. So, yeah, I'm not sure what that's about, but no, I think I'm going to start tomorrow and then, we're going to start it tomorrow and then I got a special surprise for the Thanksgiving edition of the live video for the 22 push-up challenge. I've got some fun stuff up my sleeve. I wanted to give this couple of thoughts. I also want to just feel decent. I want to get a good night's sleep and try to do 22 push-ups without the camera on and see just how bad it is. Now, I know what you're thinking. 22 push-ups. Dude, I'm huge. I'm a big dude. I mean, that would take a lot of strong arms. You know, pretty strong chest. I have a pretty strong chest. I can do some push-ups. I just don't know if I can do 22 straightforward man push-ups. Which is, I mean, hurts my feelings to say that. I feel bad. I'm ashamed already, and I haven't even screwed it up on camera yet. But this is going to come probably tomorrow night. We're working a half day tomorrow. I'm getting off at 2:00. I'm going to go swing by Trader Joe's and a couple places, get some stuff to make for Thanksgiving, grab some wines and whatnot. And then I'm going to go home and I think I'm going to have, Jim Ducky Laurent hold the camera and I'm going to do my first 22 pushups or my first attempt at 22 pushups on camera tomorrow. This is going to be pathetic. So if you're just tuning in, if you didn't hear yesterday's show, I forgot to mention, my friend Ken Kramer, the illustrious Ken Kramer tagged me in this 22 push-ups for the 22 veterans that killed themselves every day. And so it was veteran suicide awareness. And he tagged me in it, so I have to do 22 push-ups every day for 22 days. And I got to tag somebody, too. I got to figure out who I'm going to tag each day, too. So this is kind of fun, though. I never did the ice bucket challenge. I never did any of this stuff. So, I'm thinking about who I'm going to tag. You know, I'm going to get going. I haven't forgot about it. So I did a whole show talking about, there were three segments of my show yesterday were about suicide and about some riffing around that. You know what? And I want to get back to that a little bit. I got a couple more things I want to say that occurred to me during, the interim since my last show. So, hey, it snowed again. This morning snowed in Denver and, it was just like, it was kind of raining when I was coming in, but it was like 40 degrees and I got in, I looked outside and it was just like snowing to beat the band. And it was serious. It was coming down. They were talking about 1 to 3 inches, but I don't think it stuck. I think it got warm again. So it's not, it's having trouble getting going here, but, that was kind of cool to just see just snow just pouring down, big, heavy flakes of snow It's kind of cool. So kind of winding down. Everybody's already kind of heading out. The building's about half empty, seems like. The shop's been pretty dead, which has worked well because I'm training one of our two new hires. So, and he's doing a really great job. It's coming along really, really well. And I've really changed the way I train as far as espresso training and all that. I used to be really hands-on all the way through the process. And I feel like people get really, there's a lot of strange hand motions and, like, you know, angles on equipment and, you know, the milk and all that. And I've really learned, and I've done this with the last couple of hires, to just let them, show them a couple things and then let them work it out by themselves. Just go, look, steam through this gallon of milk and pull shots and pour them and taste it. And then just get it down, just kind of feel you. I let them watch a bunch of videos, and then I let them just, I show them a couple times, and then I get out of the way. And I just let them play with the machine and try these skills out and get some muscle memory without me just kind of like hanging over their heads and just looking over their shoulder the whole time. And then I'm like, look, you know what? When you feel like you got it, when you feel like the texture of the milk's good and you got the shots are pulling right, make a latte, bring it to me, and present it, and I'll taste it, and I'll look at it, you know? And so it's kind of fun, you know, they come over, they say, like, okay, I think this is it, you know? And you kind of taste it, and you tell them what's right, tell them what's wrong. It's kind of, it's enjoyable. I kind of like doing it. So we're going to continue that in the morning. We're going to continue our new guy, PJ's, his espresso ninja training here tomorrow. And then we're taking off at 2:00, and then, I'm going to go buy food. So I'm going down to, I normally go to California for Thanksgiving, but I'm going to California next week. So, and I couldn't manage this with the staff so low right now. I couldn't manage the time off. Normally I kind of connect the weekends and take some extra time off, and I just, it's the way things landed this time around, I just couldn't do it. So, and I like to go to California for my feast day. So I kind of celebrate the Feast of St. Andrew, kind of the way people celebrate their birthday. I don't, it's a long story, but it's always kind of been, there's been several times it's kind of spiritually significant to me. So Over the Rhine, one of my favorite bands I've been listening to since 90, 91. They have some great Christmas albums. And, you know, kind of like Sufjan Stevens does, where it's kind of, they've been doing this since before Sufjan. They do these records, and there are some covers, but originals and stuff. And this really beautiful, soulful Christmas music. And they do a handful of acoustic Christmas shows every year. And this time around, they are doing a show at the Troubadour in LA on my feast day. And I was, and so I'm like, you know what? That's it. That's a sign. I'm going. So I got a bunch of people from California going. If you're listening, you're in California, and there's any tickets available, we will be at the Troubadour November 30. I think it's at 9 p.m. And we will be watching Over the Rhine play beautiful acoustic Christmas music. And you are all more than welcome to come. So if you show up, say hi. And, so I'm going out there next week. So instead, I'm going to Chris Special Treats Stefanik's house for Thanksgiving. So I've been to Chris's house, man. I remember Chris's. I went to Thanksgiving at Christmas at Chris's house for about 2 years ago, and maybe it's 3 years ago. And my gosh, we had to have a conversation about, okay, next year we're going to dial it back and we're going to assign dishes, because we had this house full of people. We all ate until we couldn't move. And then we ate again later that day till we couldn't move. And there was so much food left over. We're like, okay, this is ridiculous. We made way too much food. As if there is a way to make too much food for Thanksgiving. So I love Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving food. I love dressing. I love mashed potatoes. I love turkey. I love gravy. And it's kind of been fun because the Whole Foods Hot Bar has had kind of the turkey feet, the kind of Thanksgiving theme going in last week. And you know, I've been getting some stuff in and mashed potatoes and all that and kind of already eaten that, or even though I didn't cook a meal. And I just, you know, I talked about addiction on the last show, and I just like to make an announcement. And hi, my name's Andrew, and I'm a cream spinach addict. Hi, Andrew. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I have eaten cream spinach like at Whole Foods like 5 times in the last week. I love cream spinach, and I don't know. I never used to like it. It used to look crazy to me, but now I'm like, cream spinach. I'm like, I want some cream spinach, but I'm not making cream spinach for Thanksgiving. I'm making my famous Brussels sprouts. And well, I got several different versions of my famous Brussels sprouts, and this batch of Brussels sprouts, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do it with caramelized onions, big thick pieces of pork belly, or maybe some big thick piece, big squares of bacon. And I'm going to go with a bourbon maple sriracha glaze. Absolutely delicious. I've made these before, and they're the bomb. Everyone loves them. I think that's what we're going to do. So there you go. That's the chatty first segment. I can't get my thoughts going. I'm distracted by the fact that I have heartburn, and I keep trying not to make weird noises into the microphone. I'm so old, I got heartburn. I can't do my show because I got heartburn. I'm so old. That's my old guy voice, in case you didn't notice. I'm sorry. Thank you. That was the old guy. All right, so let's go to the break. I'm going to go have heartburn on the break. Let's go to the break, and when we get back, we'll talk about something else. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. Be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we're heading into the holiday season. A lot of people are traveling, lots of travel. I'm traveling next week, going to California, come back for a short 3 days, get back on the road, going back to the promised land that is Flint, Michigan. To see the lovely and talented Father James Mangan and Bethany Kuhn and all the beautiful people in the Catholic community of Flint, and see what amazing miracles have happened since the last time I was there. God's moving in that city. It's absolutely beautiful. Amazing stuff. But the last thing I want to do is like book more travel. I'm not really planning on going anywhere for Christmas. Am I? I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out how to go about this. Because here, why would I want to travel more? Christmas, I mean, I could go home for Christmas. I could just bring my mom out for Christmas. Figure out something else for Christmas. Maybe go back to California for Christmas. But I just got back from California at that time, right? I mean, I can never get too much California. But why would I want to travel some more? Here's why. So all this travel I've been doing here lately for consulting with my my apostolate Calix, I'm surprising to myself because I've never been a big constant traveler. I've never had kind of the gig that travels a lot, but I've been on the road so much that I'm only 6 segments away from having the premier silver. Premier Silver with United, the awards travel, you know, not award travel, but you know, like they're like Premier Club. The bottom end is like, you have to have 30 segments for silver, and I'm going to have enough money spent on travel for the year that qualifies, and I'm gonna not have enough miles, but you can have miles or segments. And I've got enough. I'm down like I need like six segments. So a segment is anytime you're on an airplane that kind of counts. Some small airplanes, they're like little connecting things, don't count. But for the most part on United, if you're on a United flight or somebody operated by United, it counts. And so every time you change planes, that's a new segment. So if you take a flight someplace and it's two stops, you have to change planes twice on the way. That would be three segments on the way there, three segments on the way back if you did the same thing. So I just have to find a flight. I either have to take a flight that I change planes once and then take another flight at some point where I don't change planes at all, or I have to find a trip where I change planes twice. And so I got on Facebook today and I was like, there's got to be a way to like search for the cheapest flight where you change planes twice so that I could just go someplace, maybe spend the night in a hotel, maybe just turn around and get back on an airplane and just fly, turn around back. Because if I get, but there's also a question of whether or not silver is really worth going to that kind of trouble for. You used to get more first class upgrades for silver. Now they're really selling more upgrades. But there are some other things that, you know, you can get a lot of, you can get upgrades to that economy plus or whatever, like with the extra leg room or whatever, you know, you can get that pretty often. And I'm going to be traveling a lot more. I don't know. And yeah, you might get some first class upgrades, maybe, you know, who knows? But the point being is that I spent the day looking around trying to figure out how to find the stupid six segment round trip flight. And so I got on Facebook and I was like asking if anybody was a travel agent, if anybody could help, if anybody had any ideas. And I came back with somebody. So Father Michael O'Loughlin Frollo from Hope Promogo. So Frollo, Father O'Loughlin Frollo. He tagged a friend, which I guess is like some kind of like Uber traveler or whatever. And he turned me on to skiplagged.com. So SKIPLAGGED, skiplagged.com. And man, what a cool site. I guess they were finding so many cheap flights and exploiting all these like kind of anomalies and kind of weird rules and stuff in the way travel prices work that United actually sued them at one point, but then dropped the suit, I think. So it's pretty cool. You can just plug in, you can plug in this site and it's got all these different things you can adjust. And you can tell them how many segments you want and you can adjust. I mean, I've seen almost everything that they have on another travel site or two, and Google Flights is amazing. I use it most of the time. But this has got a few things in the same place that you can't find in the same place and combine the things. And it's pretty cool. It's a really amazing site. So if you're a traveler, if you're looking for flights especially here as things are starting to get more expensive around the holidays, skiplag.com. I should send them an invoice for this endorsement. I haven't booked anything with them, so I don't know. I haven't actually clicked through and booked anything because I did some transactions with United to get these next two flights that I needed. And one of them they offered me like a really cheap, upgrade. And they offered on both segments and I'm like, man, okay. So this is a client paying for the flight. And I'm like, well, I'll eat that little bit of an upgrade and have like a real seat and, you know, to and from, you know. And I clicked on them and you said yes. And then I hit my credit card and this, and like my browser just did something weird. Like it just went back. And when I tried to go back in, it said that those weren't available to buy, that I had to wait until try to upgrade later. And then I looked and they're still for 2 days. They've been on my US bank online thing, they've been pending. And I'm like, well, come on. Are they going to go through? And if they do go through, because I've got my tickets and they don't show me in first. So I'm like, if you're going to charge me the money for reels, if you're going to keep that money, then you need to give me a first class ticket. I mean, worse is going to, the United's been really good with me about this when there's a mistake. So I'm sure if they do take the money and they don't give me the first, if there's no first available, they'll give me the money back. There's no doubt about that. I'm not worried about the money, but whether or not I'm going to be in first each way is affecting how many how many of these segments I need. Because if I go first both directions on that flight, that'll be the equivalent of another full segment, and I'll need five segments, you know, or five and a half. Yeah, I'll need five and a, let's see, I'll need five and a half segments then, because I need six and a half now. But so there you go. I'm like, I've spent the day half, you know, while I was making this guy just pull shots and steam milk all day, I was, in between doing emails and stuff like that, I was playing with a bunch of travel tools and trying to find a cheap flight for an open weekend to just get on a plane, go someplace, turn around and come back in a couple of days that would give me my six segments so I could have premier silver status. So there you go. If anybody knows of a really cheap flight out of Denver that would make me change planes twice, I'll give you a massive shout out and come up with something else to give you. I don't know. I'll figure it out. All right. So going tonight to have drinks with some people. And the reason we're getting together is because Carolyn Leatherman is in town. And so I want to give a massive shout out to Carolyn Leatherman. Carolyn used to work at the Augustine Institute. She studied at the Institute and then she worked here. And now she is down in either Austin or College Station, Texas, somewhere down in that area, in that Austin College Station, you know, that area, somewhere in that general Texas thing. There. No, I know she's not in San Antonio. She's somewhere either in College Station or Austin. I think she's in College Station. Anyway, haven't seen her in a while. Love her to pieces. One of the best human beings I know. Massive shout out to Carolyn Leatherman. Gonna go have some drinks with them tonight. So, man, it's just interesting. Everybody's kind of dialing it down a little bit. The holiday season's kind of kicking in. People are kind of taking off early, getting ready to go. The building was pretty empty today. I think people have already started kind of heading off back to the different places of Red State flyover country that they happen to be from to getting the jump on the traffic. So, yeah, I don't know what's maybe that holiday thing will permeate the counter position. Maybe we'll get some holiday themed stuff. Maybe we'll talk about pilgrims or turkeys or, you know, maybe I'll knock something. Oh man. One thing I want to look at is I was flipping through the new, Anthony Bourdain cookbook that I got, and he's got an entire breakdown about how to do Thanksgiving. And one of the things he has, so maybe you could pull this out this week. He's got the stunt turkey. So there's the business turkey and then there's the stunt turkey. The stunt turkey is a smaller turkey. All you're really worried about is getting that skin golden brown. You're going over the top. You're putting it on kale. You're putting the little frills on the ends of the legs. I mean, this turkey is about nothing but looking pretty on the table. And then you got this business bird in the kitchen that you've cooked completely different that will taste delicious, that everyone's going to love. And he literally has you like, show this turkey. Here it is. Everybody dig it? Good. And then you whisk it off to the kitchen and you cut up this other bird, which you cooked in a completely different way. That is way more flavorful and moist than everything, but it just wouldn't look good on the table. So I don't know if I'm ready to go that far with my Thanksgiving commitment to do a stunt turkey, but I don't know. Who knows? Maybe maybe for Christmas I'll break out the stunt turkey and I'll do a segment on it. All right, let's go back to the break and find something serious to talk about when we get back. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then how we crave hanging and it's dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I got a, how to say it? I've got a general, man, frog in my throat here. I got a general theme here that I want to look at. Just, again, it's not altogether completely formed here. So we've gone from two chatty segments to some possible vague rambling and musing. But I don't think you guys would be too surprised if I was rambling and musing, or even ranting and musing. Gosh, this heartburn thing is getting me. I'm like, my chest hurts. I feel like I'm having a heart attack or something, but it's heartburn. It's like, oh my gosh, it's rough today. And it's so weird. I have no idea what it was. I didn't eat anything out of the ordinary. Just weird to me. So weird. I should have just left and like went and bought like Tums or something and then came back and did the show, but I didn't want to go all the way to the store, you know? Anyway, so this enough with the heartburn. I started reading this article by Bishop Robert Barron, I think it was, or at least it was on Word on Fire. I think it was by Bishop Barron. Do I have it? There's a great question. Do I have it? Do I have it? I don't see it. I think I saved it. All right. So I was reading this article by Bishop Barron about why you should read Liturgy and Personality by Dietrich von Hildebrand right about now. And they just did a re-release of the book and I bought it. And he was making some arguments about liturgy and stuff. And I haven't read the book yet, so but there was just a couple things he said that got me thinking along a line. And this isn't really what he was writing about, but it kind of sparked kind of a trajectory of kind of mulling things over in my head. And that is the relationship between kind of humility and contingency, and how those things relate to our relationship with nature and our relationship to liturgy. Now, here lately, I've been doing a lot of work with some projects up in Flint, Michigan, and one of the things we're working on is a Catholic worker communitarian farm. And this farm is going to do Salatin style, you know, polyface farms style grass fed rotation beef farming. And they're going to use that to kind of heal the land because it's just been soybeans and corn and stuff for a long time. And like polyface farms was before Joel Salatin took over his dad's farm, out in Virginia. So I've been reading some of that. I've been reading Miraculous Abundance. I've been working on that about permaculture. And so I've been looking at these people and looking at their role in relationship to nature. And that got me thinking about some stuff. So we tend to, you know, try having a conversation with anyone about anything natural, and you will quickly see that they are descendants of Francis Bacon. Why do I say intellectual descendants of Francis Bacon? Why do I say that? Because they believe that nature is to be conquered. Nature is to be overcome. Nature is only there to be shaped into our image and made to do what we want it to do. It is a, and in the modern kind of super materialist version of that, you have this idea that of kind of, it's just atoms in the space in between them. That's all there really is. anything that is not an atom or its relative position to another atom, so this is basically very small geometry, is just our opinion about that relationship, or are a group of people's opinions about that particular geometrical relationship between particles and in space. And sometimes those opinions about those relationships get grouped into things like religions, but those are just something that you just decide to believe, and it's ultimately just cultural, and it's ultimately just a group of people having opinions on the positions of atoms. That's all it is, right? And so that, where does the rubber meet the road on this? Whether or not, look at contraception, whether or not there is an end to the sexual act, apart from what I intend for it. You know, I hear this time and time again, when you bring up contraception and you say that the end of sex, the end of the sexual faculty in our species, is because our species has an intellect and a will and an interior life, and we're a personal species, that it's the creation, it's procreation, it's the creation of more of us and the unity of the two people. And ultimately, even the unity of the two people in some ways is ordered towards creating a safe, stable environment to rear this offspring in, and to educate them and to teach them how to be what we are. And I don't know how many times I'll say something like sex procreation is sex is for the sake of procreation. They'll say, well, I don't intend to make a baby every time I have sex. When you say sex is for the sake of, they immediately say, I don't intend to, because there's no concept that things in nature are ordered to anything, that there's anything teleological, that there's anything that is designed, that there is a for the sake of in nature. They think that that is just religion reading our lens, our opinion on this particular set of relationships between particles. And we're saying that's, we're just reading that into it. Whereas, you know, everybody from Aristotle to Monsignor Zani, whoever's paying attention to reality, will look at reality and see, well, it seems like nature acts for an end. It looks like reality tells us this, right? You know, but they will say, no, it can't be the case. But so the only ends, the only intent, the only thing that could be for the sake of in nature is for me to intend this or that, right? And so they have a problem with that. And it's interesting that I think that if you can try to get someone outside of a moral realm and see that through things like grass-fed rotation farming or permaculture or some of these things where you go, oh, if you figure out how the soil works and how micro ecosystems work and how these different relationships in nature work. You know, remember when we were learning music as little kids, if you're old enough, you remember this, and you learn the scale is, you know, all cows eat grass, right? Now it'd be all cows eat soybeans or all cows eat corn. You couldn't do that. It would mess up the scale, right? But all cows eat grass. Why? So you start looking at like, oh, when we let them eat what they're designed to eat, what they thrive on, then they don't need all these antibiotics. They don't need this. They don't get the kind of E. coli that gets passed on in milk that needs to be killed by pasteurization and all this stuff. There's all these things that happen that make you go, oh, wow, this heals the land. When you stop plowing and putting lots of fertilizer and weird chemicals into your land and you start having animals on the land and they're growing plants in the same places and you have these different species of plants growing right next to each other and all this stuff, it's almost like it's designed to work in a certain way. And so people start seeing nature as something to be passive to a certain extent, or to stand in kind of a relationship of discovery and then a kind of fitting into the patterns of. Now, if I think that the power of something like farming or hunting or maybe like some of the ways that people live when they get involved in the paleo movement or something, you know, like no yellow light after dark, or people doing ice baths to in cold, you know, doing different types of cold resistance and everything. You take it out of the moral realm, and they start seeing that there's a way in which you can relate to nature that is not one of domination and exploitation, but rather of cooperation with nature. And I think that can come back to the moral realm. But I want to talk about, after we get back from the break, maybe a little bit about the moral realm, but I want to talk about something analogous to that or kind of similar to that in the realm of the liturgical and in spiritual practice. So let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley, and we'll be right back.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Okay. I appreciate y'all playing along with this. I'm kind of like, there's times when I got something I want to get off my chest. There's times when I've got something that's fairly thought out. And sometimes I've just kind of got a bunch of pieces and I'm like, man, there's something going on here. And I just have a bunch of bullet points and notes, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to just do this without an ad. I'm going to work out this idea out loud on the air. And if it doesn't go anywhere, we get to a dead end and you're like, well, that didn't really work out. And then you kind of get an insight into how my mind works and how I figure things out and how I come up with insights. And, you know, as I've said before, I'm not worried about getting this right. I'm not worried about being an authority. I am. This show is all of reality filtered through the lens of one human person. And sometimes the way that filtering happens with me is a bunch of disparate ideas seem to have the ring of something in common to me. And I work it out. And I work it out best by talking about it. But I've been too busy and not around the right friends in the right way to talk about this stuff here lately, since I thought about this stuff. So we were talking about nature and how there's two ways to look at nature. One is, oh, nature is something that I'm a natural being. I'm in nature. There's something about nature. Nature has rules and ends and natural law. And I should play along with nature. I should not oppose nature and try to bend it into my own image. I should say that nature tells me something about reality and I should play along with it, right? And then when I do, I discover some things in nature that point beyond nature, right? And then there's another side that says, I'm going to dominate nature. I'm going, you know, this is kind of the Francis Bacon school of thought, that I'm going to dominate nature. I'm going to force nature into my image. I'm going to make nature do what I damn well want it to do. I'm going to nature is a blank canvas. It is a bunch of paints, and I will paint whatever I want with these things. And this is the realm of people who think they can cut something off or sew something on or take a bunch of hormones or do something, and they can then even change something as deep as like their gender. Or they can just blatantly just say, it doesn't matter if I do any of those things. My biological sex and my gender are not the same thing, and you just can't tell me any different because I am not in any way beholden to or subject to or contingent upon nature. And my idea was that maybe getting outside of the issues that are considered kind of moral or hot button or hard to understand in that way, and into something like farming or hunting or sleep or eating or diet or something like that, that people can see the results of what happens when you play along with nature, and they start going, oh, I see, you know. But then I've had this idea that there's a spiritual kind of analog to this. And that is, I think that liturgy, especially traditional liturgy, and I'm not a big traditional Latin Mass guy. I'm not talking about traditional Latin Mass versus Novus Ordo. I'm not talking about, I'm 4 weeks in. I think last 4 weeks I've been to the Divine Liturgy. I'm going kind of Byzantine, seems like, at the moment. So I don't have a dog in that race of traditional Latin Mass versus Novus Ordo. There can be very beautiful, very reverent Novus Ordos and completely in English, with not music that isn't Gregorian chant. I'm not that guy. So don't cast me as that guy. But there is an aspect in which you come to the liturgy. You come to this meeting, this interaction with God, with the anticipation of being changed, not of changing. You come to it with the anticipation of kind of throwing yourself against the rock and letting yourself be broken. So, you know, like nature, you're not going to define, you're not going to eat what you think you should eat and then have a bunch of surgeries and take a bunch of pills and do all these different things to try to force the end result that you want, regardless of what you eat. You're going to play along. You're going to go, what kind of creature am I? What was I made to eat? And you're going to eat that, you know, and then you're going to get the natural result of living in the way in accordance with the thing that is higher than you, right? Well, I think that liturgy is like that. I think that spiritual practice in general is like that. Even just prayer is like that. Maybe not even just liturgical prayer, just the kind of prayer, this mental prayer, just kind of that informal prayer where you're just talking to God and you're putting yourself before God. That type of prayer is a prayer that acknowledges your contingency. It is a prayer of humility. It is a prayer that says, I want to, you know, I remember Jazani talking about this, how I am where I'm from. I am what made me. You know, and he compares us to like a spring where you'd say, well, what are you? Well, I don't know, but I know I go back deep into this and this. So I am connected to this source that's deep, and I've sprang up from this source. And this source is more me than me. I'm from this source. This source is what defines me. This source, I am that which is from this. That is what my definition is. Right. And so when you come at all of reality that way, if you come at reality, in especially in spiritual reality, with that kind of contingency and that acknowledgement and that embracing of the contingency, the contingent nature within us, that we are made, that we are creatures, that we stand in relationship to a creator, as creature to creator, as made to maker, and that rather than us being somehow needing to assert some kind of satanic pride, some kind of adversarial usurping of some kind of power that wasn't given us, to try to take the place and be this, you know, kind of being that is its own source, this kind of this Nietzschean Ubermensch, so to speak, you know, where we're kind of like we're self-defining, self-overcoming, self-creating. You know, we're like Baron Munchausen, you know, like we're pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps. You know, it's we're if we refuse to do that and we have true humility, then here's what's amazing. Then we can discover the beauty and the deep kind of ordered, talented, beautiful, kind of effective, interesting particularity that each of us is. And real humility acknowledges the real. It just tells the truth. If there's some great saint who's holier than anybody's ever lived, and she happens to be some beautiful woman, and you say to her, "My goodness, you are absolutely beautiful. You're stunning." Humility doesn't say, "Oh, no, I'm not. No, please. No, I, you know." Humility says, "Thank you. She's beautiful, and she knows she's beautiful. And she's grateful for her beauty. She has that in the right perspective. She doesn't see that as important compared to other more important aspects of herself, but she sees the symmetry of her face, or the natural athletic nature of her figure, or whatever, or the appealing shape of her hair, or whatever. She sees this as a good, and she's thankful for it." You know, when I met I can't remember his name. Is it Pietro? I can't remember. The oldest, I think it was the oldest son of Saint Gianamola. I met him at a conference in Nashville, Tennessee, and me and him and Mike Morelli, who was like second place on season 7 of Biggest Loser, was speaking at the same conference. And we ended up kind of the weird little triumvirate, and we got in all the same shuttles and sat at the same tables and all the little dinners in the little VIP room. We'd sit on the same couch and talk in between talks and stuff. And he was just telling me all these beautiful stories about his mom. He's this old Northern Italian man that now sells real estate. And he says to me, my mother, I'm gonna do my Italian accent. "My mother was a beautiful woman," he says. "And she knew it." He says she used to love to get dressed up, you know, and stand at the top of the stairs to go out with her husband. And she would not descend the stairs until she saw her husband come by, and he would stop and he would look up at her, and then she would slowly, majestically descend the stairs and bask in the joy that her beauty brought her husband. And that is completely congruent with even evidence of her sanctity and why she was a saint. That's not pride. That's gratitude. And I think that that's where we want to go with this, and where we're going to end it. Being, basking in our contingency and cooperating with nature, throwing ourselves against the rock of reality and letting it break us, as opposed to trying to shape it into our own image, is an act of gratitude. It's an attitude that says, "Thank you for making me. I thank you for being what I am." It is, dear listeners, an act of thanksgiving. So happy and humble Thanksgiving to everyone. And let's pull the plug and pop the cork. I'm probably a good Riesling for this turkey. On another episode of The Counter Position. See you on the other side. Take your please, marble stone.